You're listening to the Scottish Football Forums podcast, the home of Scottish football banter.
Hi, welcome to the latest episode of Scottish Football Forums podcast. We're at season 13, episode 44. We've got a few regulars on tonight, including myself, John. We've got Josh. How you doing?
Good evening, John. How you doing, mate?
Aye, I'm alright, aye. Alright for a Monday.
Especially
as we've got a wee bit of an international to look forward to tomorrow night.
International break, mate. Got a preview of the game tomorrow night.
Exactly. And reflect on, obviously, what happened on Friday. We've got Charlie. How you doing?
Aye, good, mate. Good to be back on.
Aye. No missing the club football this weekend?
I was. It's the first weekend in a long time. I've not been to any football, so it'll be nice to have it back this week.
Aye, definitely. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm good, John.
Right, good. And then Scott, you all right?
Nice. Back on for the first time in a while. It's always good, John.
You like a wee bit of Scotland chat, though, don't you?
Oh, definitely.
So just quickly before I introduce my guest, I'm going to just say as well, shout out to Dave. Dave and John in the first place. We obviously covered the Women's Cup final yesterday. Plenty of content available to check that out. And then earlier today, we put out on YouTube a preview with a journalist from Northern Ireland ahead of the game tomorrow. So it's about 25 minutes long. We're trying to relaunch the YouTube channel in preparation for the Euros, where we're planning to maybe kind of try and do some stuff over in Germany. So we'll see how that goes, eh, Josh? How sober we are.
Look, mate, I can't guarantee anything over in the Euros. I mean, I have guaranteed you I will meet up with you and we'll get a few beers, but I must have said that to just about half of the folk in Glasgow when we've been talking about the Euros. So, I can't wait for it. And we will, you know, we'll get some kind of wee videos and wee kind of mini pods out there and all that when we meet up in across the three cities. It's going to be a great summer.
Is your content not going on OnlyFans, though? Because you'll be there with tapped off, I think.
I don't know, mate. I mean, when you think about the size of the Germans and the handsomeness of them, I don't know if I'm going to really fit the bill for that.
Josh, how big's your suitcase going to be? Because you lose your tops quite often, so you have to take about double the load.
First Scotland trip I've ever been on where I've had to take hold luggage. What about that? Normally, it's just a rucksack with a few tops and the kilt on the bottom half of my body and a toothbrush. But I hold luggage for the first time ever.
Right, okay. So we'll introduce our guest now. Before John Blaisdell, words in my ear like a wee devil, because I take too long to introduce him. So we've got author and broadcaster, Scotland fan and Dundee United fan, Billy Kay. How you doing?
I'm grand, thanks. Good to be here.
Hi, nice to have you. Back in November, we kind of initially spoke about it, and then you finally get the call up, as we put it.
I got the call. I'm ready. I haven't got my new Scotland tap on. I'm saving that for the opening match in Germany.
Aye, quite right. I don't know if any of us have got the new Scotland top yet, have we? Anyone got it?
No.
Picking it up next week at the airport, John. I'm actually away on a scouting mission to Munich next week, as you know.
That's right.
For a gig, and I'm going to pick it up in the airport. For any listeners actually listening that know, a lot of people know this, that you get the tops a lot cheaper in the airport, no VAT, and you get your 15% discount with the SSC. So my mate get the last two tops, the home and the away, for about £90 total. So
definitely worth it.
Yeah, I know, get your orders in now.
For those that maybe kind of don't know yourself quite so well, Billy, if you give yourself a wee introduction in terms of to the listeners.
Right. I'm a writer and broadcaster. I was born in 1951 in Goston in Ayrshire. My dad was a Killie supporter when I was wee, so I used to go to a rugby park. And I was followed fit by Scotland and Killie when I was a wee boy. The first Scotland match I got to was the one that Alan Gulzean scored, the winner with a header at Hampden. And there was 144,000 of us there that day. And I've been very, very lucky with my Scotland history because I've mostly seen Scotland beat England. So I've just been awful lucky. I'm better kent as a writer and broadcaster. I made TV and then radio documentaries over the years for the BBC on everything in Scottish cultural history, about language, about the diaspora, about traditional music, about all kinds of things. And I'm probably best kent, I've written a few books, probably best kent for the book Scots the Mither Tongue, which is a history of the Scots language and how we come to speak in the lowlands of Scotland. So that's a few details.
Aye, ideal, and it's always good to hear about Scotland beating England.
Aye.
Right. Right, okay, so we'll kick off tonight by reflecting on Friday night. One of the most bizarre games, because it's probably up there where I think actually one of the best Scotland performances I've seen in years. The way we were on playing the total football for about 70 minutes, and then just so happened that the Dutch were a bit clinical. I think it all came down to when Billy Gilmour came off, to be honest. The changes disrupted our flow, and they started to kind of take control of the midfield. But what did you think, first of all, Josh, or ask yourself what you thought?
Look, much of the same as yourself. I mean, what we were talking about on Friday, how we were playing total football, you know, or at least a Scotland version of total football, you know, for about 60 minutes. I disagree. I don't think Gilmour coming off was the big changing point. I think probably Tierney coming off is a big changing point. There's been a lot of anger, no anger, but angst directed towards Souttar for the kind of goals that he was at fault for. And while he was at fault, I think, you know, what's not really been talked about as much as the fact that when you're bringing on a centre back and playing in a back three when he normally plays in a back two and putting him in at 60-70 minutes at centre back against, you know, a team who have been playing for 60-70 minutes and were in the ascendancy at that point, and then let's not forget that he's gone up and he's you know, his legs are cold, if you want to put it that way, and he's going in against world class players in like Xavi Simons and Memphis Depay and actually the boy Weghorst is class. Let's not forget he was at Man U last season. So I mean, yes, he was at fault, but I'm not going to lay too much blame at him. But I agree with you. It probably was for that first 60-70 minutes. Probably was some of the best football we played under Clark. And I think we've learned more than if we'd have took a crappy 1-0 win against them. I'm glad that we had that performance and got pumped 4-0. Because it meant nothing anyway.
Aye, exactly. I mean, I think fair to say, Scott, we've seen maybe those types of performances at home, but not so much away in terms of that style of play.
I think that's the benefit of a friendly against the Netherlands, is having that possession, showing what we can do on the ball and get a dictating play against a superior team, which we probably haven't seen under Clark, certainly not away from home. I do find it very kind of funny when I see when we get certain results and people just throw players under the bus. It happens pretty much every defeat. Even Clark was still getting thrown under the bus not that long ago, you know, the results don't go the right way. You know, Josh mentioned Shanklin and the group chat, and I know he's not the only one.
My pal Shanklin,
you've met them all now. Shanklin did in Souttar, they played 7 games each. You know, I remember going to the Denmark game and Souttar was one of the best players. It's like, we need to get calmed down and just, some people have off nights, as Josh says, it's hard bringing a centre-back on and expecting something with only 20 minutes to go. And a striker after only 7 games, I'll always say this about international football, it takes usually about 20 games for a striker, especially a Scottish striker, if you look at the records, to start kicking on. And I think Shanklin's miss wasn't that bad a miss by any stretch. People say, oh, this scored again for Hearts. Maybe not. Who knows? It's not. And if we're going
He probably had it too well.
But the point...
Well, I mean... How could he hit it too well, John?
It was like a bit too much on it. Like, because bear in mind, it hit the bar. So, like,
but if you're going to have a performance like that, you're going to miss chance like that. Do it in a friendly. Don't do it in the tournament. And hopefully, we could have it all in the tournament.
This is John doing his propaganda, by the way. You've been watching St Caddocks versus Talbot at the weekend with Shankland, Ferguson and Gilmore. Aye. And now you're coming on here with your Shankland propaganda. Yeah. Right, I'm not having it.
It was ready for having ones for you. I was tempted to get him to grab my phone and get a wee voice note from you.
I don't.
Billy, you've obviously got good experience of watching Shankland at Dundee United. Yeah. Do you think he is potentially the man for the job starting?
I'm no 100% sure. I think you maybe get more out of Dykes and Adams over 70 minutes, but definitely the man to bring on if you need a goal with half an hour to go. But I think he's a fine player. I mean, it was Lauren Shankland that got Dundee United promoted that year. It wasn't anybody else in the team. The number of games that he saved Dundee United was phenomenal. Going back to Souter, Souter again was with Dundee United, and I thought he was always a classy player. I wasn't ever sure if he had the heart to be a centre-half, to have the physicality to be a centre-half. I realise he's come on quite a bit now, excuse me, with Rangers. But that was always a doubt there. And he did have a bad game, but as you see, it was coming on when things had turned already. I thought it was a bizarre. What strikes me more and more about FITBA as I got older is that it's a bizarre game where you can be world class for 70 minutes and no score a goal and the other team scores four. It was outrageous. The result compared to the way the game had gone. I think it was a good run out for the opening of the game against Germany, though, because I think it'll be a similar type of game. And if we can play like that, but hopefully take one or two of our chances, I think that'll have stood us in good stead and make us aware at that level. If you make any wee mistakes, you'll be punished.
Chris, what was your own thoughts on Friday night? What do you think?
I quite enjoyed Hamilton. Sorry, you mean the football, right? I've watched the highlights since. And you know what reminds me of? Mind Celtic played Real Madrid last season and they were great for like 60 minutes and then got battered because class tells. That's kind of what that felt like. Like, we are almost a good team, like almost a really good team, but we just are missing those little key points. Like, we don't have the top class strikers. I do like Dykes. I like Adams when he's on form. He hasn't been that for a while. I think Shankland can do a job for us. I don't think any of them are really that step up that are going to get us to the point that we would all love them to be at. If we had found that, it would be amazing, but they don't feel like it. And then I think the changes at the back, like you say, if you take Tierney out of that back three, and the back three just doesn't work. We've seen that when Tierney's been injured in more important games than the Dutch game. But I don't want to be too negative about this, but what does encourage me is I was at that friendly against England and we sat after them and we just showed them too much respect. And it was one of the worst performances we've had under Clark in a long time. Then the following month we went out and we put up a brilliant fight against Spain. And again, it just didn't quite work out and the class eventually told that we were unlucky with a slip for a second goal. This felt more like the Spain game than the England game. So we are putting in the performances against the top nations. We're just lacking that final bit that will get us over the line and turn these results into something that isn't a 4-0 pumping.
Aye, I mean, the thing will be, Charlie, if we're to think about it as well, the more we play these teams, the better we're going to get at facing them. And we've got to be encouraged as well by the amount of chances we created against our top-tier team. I mean, hearing what the last... So four out of the last six games that we've lost have been against teams in the top eight in the world. I mean, it's no as if we're getting beat by a Kazakhstan or a Cyprus like we've maybe done in the past. So,
you're right. I think the one thing that is perhaps a bit concerning is we've no won in six games, but like you say, four of them have been against teams that are top eight. So It's encouraging though. Our result aside, on Friday I thought we played really well, and for wee spells in the game I thought we were the better team. So that's, we're moving in the right direction. It's just important that we don't dwell too much on it going into the game against Northern Ireland. We need to get a better result. I thought the chances we created were good. I think if we have a clinical striker, we'd probably score that one. Well, that's funny saying that when Shanklin's been so clinical this season for Hearts, but I think, like someone's already mentioned, we don't have that world-class striker up front. So I think that's probably where it's going to tell in the Euros if we're getting chances like that. We're going to need to take at least one of them a game. So, aye, but it's encouraging. Like you say, I think hopefully we're moving in the right direction.
Scott, something you've kind of mentioned quite often previously is the fact that we lack maybe a kind of player to sit in midfield and protect the defence. It's maybe not required so much in a back three against the smaller nations, but I think against the likes of these Netherlands, the France, your England's, need someone there that can do the dirty work.
It kind of, you either need that or you need somebody to come out in the centre of defence and come out. So the first goal kind of reminded me about 2 years ago under Clark, 2 and a bit years ago under Clark, where we just weren't closing people down quick enough. And that kind of happened again. So we talk about a striker. We don't have a top class striker. Hopefully somebody's going to come through. I think this defensive midfield, we don't have somebody who is automatically going to be the ball winner. I think our best is going to be Ryan Jack, but we can't keep him fit. So we need to try and work out, you know, obviously it kind of works with Gilmore in terms of keeping the ball, so we don't need to tackle as much. And I think McGregor's a good person to have in beside him as well. But yeah, a top class, but then, you know, probably we can still use top class players in various other positions. Striker's just the most obvious one, but again, a holding midfielder, we don't really have somebody who can do that. But then maybe we don't need one if Gilmore can continue to dictate play and we just take chances.
Exactly. Aye. I thought the criticism of Angus Gunn was pretty harsh. So whether the rest of you agree, I don't think he was really at fault for not much.
I think we had a couple of good saves in the game, actually, for what I've seen the highlights.
Yeah. No, he looks solid.
Thought he probably could have done better for the first one, if I'm being hypercritical. Look, it's a wonder strike, but I don't know, maybe I'm an extremist like this. I just think, you know, if a strike like that is going in and it's mid-level in the goal, I just always think, you know, the goalie should be, you know, getting a firmer hand to it. But yeah, I mean, no takeaway. It was a wonder strike.
But, you know, yeah, you have to take in the pace and you have to take in the fact that nobody's then closing it down as well. So it's got a clean strike on goal. The pace gathers more. I wouldn't put him at fault. I know why people can, you know, but I think Josh is kind of hypercritical, I think.
Someone that struggled a wee bit, I think, due to lack of games. Patterson, I think, did struggle a bit. In terms of going forward, we didn't get to see as much of that from his game. Probably have to do more defensive work due to the fact that they are front three, probably.
But then that's the issue, is that Patterson's better going forward than he is defending. It's just a kind of modern-day fullback. They're more wingers than they are what we would term as a left back or a right back. And as you say, he's not playing, you know, as many minutes as he would probably like at Everton. But again, it's just one of those things. It's a performance that I'm not going to be too disappointed in unless it's going to be a competitive game. And then I would start to be more kind of critical of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the concern will be at the Euros. We would rather Hickey's fit. But if Hickey's not fit, beyond Patterson, you're dependent on Ralston, who again isn't playing for Celtic much. So you're going to go in with two potential right wing backs that are not playing football. And I think it's a different story. I know we've had this debate before about Kieran Tierney, right? And maybe he wasn't playing every week at Arsenal, but Kieran Tierney's get however many games under his belt of professional football. mean, I don't even know if Nathan Patterson's played 50 games of football. He's probably played more for Scotland than he has played at club level almost. He's got 20 caps. So hopefully Higgy's fit, I think, for the Euros. That's a big one.
The thing about, I would say, about Patterson is what type of football has he played, though? He's played Premier League, he's played the Scottish Premiership, and he's played European football. It's not as if he's just, you know, came from, you know, the Scottish Championship and just... I know you've got a big thing with how many minutes he gets, but see if you actually analyse how much minutes he gets. He is getting more and more per season, and... It's a kind of one that you want somebody fresh for the Euros. You know, if you overplay Tierney, I'm going to a game, my birthday, the 15th of May, I'm going across to San Sebastian, going to see Real Sociedad and Valencia. Part of me doesn't want Tierney playing. So, I mean, that's what it's come down to. And one of the reasons I'm going is to see Tierney, do a wee kind of scouting mission. But a part of me doesn't want him playing and then seeing him getting injured.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to see any players are getting injured, but you want to see the best players, surely.
Yeah. I thought Patterson had a poor game, just that was the main thing. He just wasn't his usual self going forward. They kept doubling back and they gave the ball away quite a few times. So it was an unusual performance by him. I thought he was the weakest link in the whole team in that very excellent 60-70 minutes we had. But hopefully Hickey will be available because he's a proper back.
Yeah, definitely. Something that did frustrate me, but obviously wanting Lewis Ferguson to get more minutes. I can understand why he isn't getting more minutes because our midfield is so strong. But we brought him on more so as like a deep line midfielder, whereas he's flying for Bologna, playing as a 10. And I did feel McGinn wasn't having his greatest game, but maybe a chance. So, like, we know what McGinn can do. Give McGinn a rest. It's a bit like at the start, Steve Clark said, I know what Aronson Dykes can do, so I'll play Shankland.
Yeah.
Ferguson a start in the position he's playing. I know he's probably not going to get ahead of McGinn or McTominay, but you never know what happens between now and the Euros. Touch wood, we don't get injuries, but it can happen. And it would be nice to see Ferguson doing what he can do at club level.
Mm-hmm.
That's something I'd like to see tomorrow. I fully expect this to go into the Netherlands game and play like the strongest team we could play. I know Steve Clark doesn't tend to make too many changes to his team, but I would expect to see at least a few changes to try a few things against Northern Ireland, and I'd like to see that from the start. One of those I would like to see is Lewis Ferguson, because I think he's more than earned this opportunity.
We think there'll be a temptation for a four at the back, maybe against Northern Ireland?
Maybe.
I'm assuming he's not going to play Tierney. So if he's not going to play Tierney, we've already discussed this, we've discussed it for a good couple of years now. We don't suit three at the back without Tierney there. It seems like an ideal opportunity to go back to four and see, without Tierney there, if that's a better defensive position for us.
You agree with that, guys? Report it back maybe tomorrow?
I don't know. Look, I think these friendlies have been good to think about, you know, giving guys a new games, but I think in terms of if we're going to be moving about formations, I think we need to be thinking now about how we're going to line up in Germany, you know, on against Germany. How are we going to be lining up on that opening fixture? Because the thing is, I want to be sure that the guys that are going to be starting that opening fixture we're absolutely certain of who we want in the team. And for me, there are still one or two wee kind of things that I'm just thinking, I'm 100% sure. And if I'm talking about those way the areas, it would be striker, it would be the person that plays in the middle of the back three. I think that's probably, I mean, you could make an argument, depending if McGregor's fit, who partners Gilmour in the midfield, because I think McTominay and McGinn supporting one striker's an inevitability.
The thing is as well, though, I think when Christie plays against the bigger nations, we do well, because he's so good at pressing the ball as well.
Very good. It was class the other night, John. honestly, it was total regista play. You know, it was absolutely him and Gilmore just really, really kind of had that great kind of connection.
Well, he was at, we expected he was maybe going to play deeper, but he actually played further forward because McTominay was the one that sat in. But aye, Christie's one that never ever disappoints for Scotland, and he gives us a bit of pace, a wee bit of creativity as well, which I would say out with that in the team we probably lack. We think at centre back, you're talking about centre back Jack Hendry. Would Clark prefer that Grant Hanley was fit for the Euros? Is that the man that he would want at the centre of the back three? Or would we be having someone else?
I think Clark would prefer to have him there, yeah.
I don't think Hendry or Souter are strong enough to play as the centre of a back three. McKenna was another one, obviously, that missed out. I think if you've not got Hanley, maybe McKenna's on. But again, struggles to keep fit.
I think you've hit the nail on the head. I think Hanley's definitely the person who's got the most experience, who's done really well in the last few years with Scotland, and that's the person I think Clark would ideally want as your centre back, as your central centre back.
Gives leadership as well. There's plenty of leaders within the squad, but unfortunately, some of the likes of Liam Cooper isn't getting games at Leeds. So that's the issue.
My concern with trying things, I know I've just said I want to try things, but you can try too much. There's very little point in trying out new guys in a new system if you're not going to play that system. You're not going to learn what those guys can do in the system you're going to use when you go to Germany. So if you play the back four on Tuesday night there, and then you spend the entire tournament playing a back three, what did you learn from playing the back four? If you bring in
suppose
the new guys,
it is, like if the back three is not working in the tournament, you need to have a bit of flexibility that you can adapt.
In which case, you would then choose to have the guys that you're expecting to play, not the new guys coming in. You can kind of do one or the other. Doing both, you're probably pushing it too far.
I think the only thing that I would suggest with the four is if Tierney doesn't play, it's a totally different prospect as a back three. And what happened in the first game of the Euros last time in the Czechs, Tierney didn't play. And we struggled big time with that loss. And that's my only reason for thinking, right, okay, let's see if a four without Tierney playing, if a four is better than... If we play a three tomorrow and Tierney's not playing and it's poor, then what do we do then? Do we just continue it every single time?
Yeah. I was wanting to ask as well, Billy, as a proud Ayrshireman, how happy are you that Steve Clark's the manager and that Billy Gilmour is so good?
I mean, I think Gilmour is an amazing wee player. I think Clark has done a great, great job. And I think he's a fine, fine man. His only fault, as far as I'm concerned, is that I think Ryan Gold will end up the greatest Scotland player that never got a Scotland cap. And I don't like the way he's been ignored, because he left Scotland to go and try and better himself in Portugal. He did reasonably well in Portugal. He got man of the match against Benfica and Sporting, regularly playing for a club that was just out of the division getting relegated. And he's playing well in the States, but he's never been given a chance by Clark. And that's the only black mark against Steve Clark. You could argue, you can't argue with what he succeeded in doing and building that team. But you mentioned Christie. To me, Ryan Gold is a number 10 being available. You would have another great option there, but we'll never see him. I think he'll end up playing for Canada. The irony is that all his pals whom he grew up with in Brechin and then playing for Dundee United, Andy Robertson, Souter, Stu, Armstrong, and there's somebody else, all played with him and are all pals with him. And I think they must feel quite gutted for him that he's been left out of the Scotland setup. Because I would say that when I saw him when he was about 16, 17, he was by far the best player I'd ever seen at that age. And I think he is a superb player. But because he left Scotland and didn't play for fashionable teams, he was he's lost to the national cause, and I think that's a big shame. So that's my. But you can't argue with what Clark has achieved with the team that he's got.
Billy, do you think it's because he plays in Canada? Because I think it's because Steve Clark looks at him and doesn't think he's worthy of a place. Because, you know, he's and I don't want to absolutely disrespect, which I'm going to do. He has picked players from Kilmarnock and stuff like that, so it's not going to be. I just don't think because he's playing in America Canada and playing in the MLS. I think he's looked at him and just for whatever reason, and I don't know what that reason necessarily is, but he doesn't seem to just like him as a player or feels that he would fit into whatever game plan that he's got.
Yeah, I think you're right. But I think it's a great shame that he never was given a chance. And the chance to give him a game was, ironically, when Scotland played some pre-season games before the last championship in the Algarve. And Ryan was playing for Ferenc, for the Faro team at that time. And they could have just brought him into the squad, give him a couple of games to see what he was like. But he never even get that chance. And it's, as I say, I think it's a shame. And he never made it with Sporting Lisbon. Sporting Lisbon were chaotic as a football club at that time. Total chaos. But then for Ferenc, regularly he would get the man of the match performance against Benfica, Sporting and Porto. So he's a quality player that's never been given a chance in a Scotland shirt. And I find that a black mark against the Scotland setup, that a player like that was never given a chance. But that's me as a Dundee United supporter who I saw him in that. I'm surrounded by Robertson and Armstrong and these people. Yeah.
Hey, quickly bring Charlie in. How did they do it? Hibs, Charlie?
It was absolutely brutal for us, but I think he was coming off the back of an injury when he signed for us. I think he played a handful of games. I can't mind if it was the season that COVID happened or the one before, but I seen him a couple of times for us. And the first game he played was a cup game against East Fife, I think. And he was one of the worst players on the park, which is a shame because I was really excited about Ryan Gold coming.
Yeah.
And thankfully for his sake, he's went on to have a better career since he's left us. But I agree with you, Billy. I think even just one cap for him would have been nice. But I think it's funny, every time the squad announcement's out, there's people on Twitter banging on about him getting a call-up. So there is people that want to see him in a Scotland strip, but for whatever reason, like Scott says, Clark hasn't picked him yet. Yep. I would still like to see him get a call-up, but I think time's going to be running out for him.
Yep.
Because he wasn't even picking Johnny Russell when he was doing well over there. I think Lewis Morgan's doing pretty well over there as well. So he obviously just doesn't maybe monitor the MLS, just decide.
I think I'm one of the people that would like to see Gold get a cap, but I agree with the majority of the guys. I think that the ship is sailing on it. And he's going to be, you know, he's going to be a Scotty Arfield. The thing is with Scotty Arfield, he was a top footballer, but I never really saw where he would fit into the Scotland team. But Ryan Gold, for me, I could see where he would fit into the Scotland team, and he's a top player. I suppose then it depends. It depends for the boy, how long does he want to wait? Because he could get, he's 26, 27 right now, he could get 30, 40 caps for Canada if he chose to play for Canada. And is he going to get that for Scotland? Not a chance.
I think you're right. I think it may be over for him, but it'll always be a wee sadness there that he never, because I say, when I saw him 15, 16, 17, I thought he could be one of the greatest Scotland players ever. But anyway, we'll see.
Ironically, he could actually be a poster boy for the next World Cup.
That's right, in Canada.
For Canada.
Yeah. So, the thought of goal scoring against Scotland and Canada doesn't appeal to me at all.
And I'm
a fatalist when it comes to karma. I think that's the kind of thing that would happen, you know?
Especially with Scotland.
Aye.
But if we beat him 4-1, though, that's all right. That's all right to score.
Talking about tournaments in Canada, obviously they share with Mexico and the USA. Billy, you were lucky enough to go to one of the World Cups in Mexico. Can you give us a wee bit of an insight what that was like?
It was fantastic. I got to the World Cup in 74 in Germany, and then 82 in Spain and 86 in Mexico. And the atmosphere was fantastic. One of the best incidents, though, was before I got to Mexico. I was in the departure lounge waiting for the flight for Houston down to Mexico City, say the day before the first Scotland match. And there was some Tartan Army boys sitting, waiting. And this tall, athletic-looking boy come down the hall and passed by. And this wee guy sitting beside me said to him, "It wasn't a goal, by the way, Jeff. It was Jeff Hurst walking past." And I didn't recognise Jeff Hurst, but as soon as he says, "It wasn't a goal, by the way, Jeff," and Hurst just kind of went in the huff and went away. So that was one of the incidents there. The World Cup, being a World Cup with Scotland, is you feel as if you're in the centre of the universe. That's what it feels like. There's nowhere else in the world you would rather be but in the stadium supporting Scotland. The Mexico one was, I wrote back and says we walked a million miles for one of their goals, because there was only one goal scored by Strachan.
I remember it well, aye.
And I was at that match. Ended up at a rodeo after it, which was great fun with the Tartan Army. No, it was a great experience. My great ambition was for my son, Ewan, that went to the Scotland matches before he went abroad and didn't see them qualify for anything. My great ambition was to go back to a big championship. So we're all joining up in the summer in Germany, and hopefully we've got a couple of tickets so far, but hopefully one or two other ones, and we can all go to these matches. The irony is, I was in Germany in 74, and exactly 50 years later, I'm going back to support Scotland in Germany.
Aye, because I know that time we spoke when I saw you at the book launch, you never had any tickets for the kind of Scotland games. Did you manage to get tickets for some of the Scotland games then?
I've managed to get two tickets for the opening match.
Right,
so
okay.
My son Ewan and I are going to that. It's a belated birthday present, a Christmas present for me. Because he lives abroad and the postal service lost presents. This is his belated Christmas present to me. The toy is going to see Scotland, Germany. And I managed in the ballot, the resale recently that opened, I managed to get two tickets for the third game, the Hungary game.
Right, okay.
So far we've got two tickets for two games, but we're still on the lookout, everyone is.
As Meatloaf say, 2 out of 3 ain't bad.
Aye, he's right. Yeah,
right.
Can I just ask Billy, what was your favourite Scotland game you've been to then? What was the most memorable one for you?
Well, the Gilzean won nothing because of the 144,000 in Hampden. That was pretty amazing for a wee boy. I'd be about 13 at the time. But also saw the time that the Scotland fans were supposedly banned for Wembley. I managed to get a ticket for that when John Robertson scored the penalty. We're played at the park. But John Robertson got the penalty that won it. And wee story, I got a lift down to Wembley for that match with Willie McIlvany, the writer, and his pals. And we met up with Hughie McIlvany, the sports writer, in Fleet Street when we arrived in London. So it was great talking about Scotland with characters like that. And I later joined up with Willie too at the 82 World Cup in Spain while he was in the same hotel. And a wee story for that 82 World Cup. We were based in a hotel that Scotland was going to stay in at one point in Malaga, and then they shifted somewhere else, maybe near Seville. So there was rooms available. And STV were based in this hotel. And at that time, Gordon Brown, before he became a notable politician, worked for STV. And he was there, and I had known Gordon for Edinburgh University. So I ended up hiring a bus to take everybody who was in this hotel in Malaga up to Seville for the Scotland-Brazil match. And we didn't have enough folks. I went into Torremolinos and wrestled up the Tartan Army boys who were in Torremolinos to join us on the bus. So it was a real motley crew of STV workers, Gordon Brown, Willie McIlvany, and a wee other folk on this bus. And it was a great experience. And there's a photo in my book, Scottish World, there's a photograph of us taken with McIlvany and with Gordon Brown before we boarded the bus for Malaga. The one wee incident, when Davy Neary scored the famous toe poke, I was literally right behind the goal. I swear that I heard the ball hit the back of the net before the explosion behind that goal occurred. But something that happened was that in the chaos, one or two people lost their footing and went down. And I'm sure that Gordon Brown was one of them. And he got a kick in the head. And when he come up, he was an England supporter and supported Gascoigne, chose Gascoigne's goal against Scotland as the best goalie he'd ever had ever seen. And I think it's all due to that, getting a bad blow in the head when he was getting stamped upon by the Scotland supporters at the Scotland-Brazil match.
As well as memories, like, kind of supporting Scotland, who would be the best opposition player that you've seen against us?
Well, that Brazil team, Socrates. Socrates for Brazil was an absolute legend. And my pal that I went to that World Cup with, Bill Campbell, also a Kilmarnock man, went to Kilmarnock Academy with him. He loved Socrates because Bill was into his smoking heavily and drinking heavily. And he identified totally with Socrates, the fact that you could smoke and drink and still be a fantastic football player. I think those days have gone. I think there's nobody like Socrates knew in world football, but he could get halfway in those days. But like characters in Scottish football back in those days too.
Aye, were you lucky enough to see Maradona?
I did. I saw Maradona at Hampden in his debut. He played against Scotland. He was up against Paul Hegarty, from memory. And what I remember about that was being in a pub in the south side before the match, and everybody saying, "Oh, this Maradona, it's all paper talk. He's not that good. A load of rubbish." And of course, he scored his first goal for Argentina against Scotland, and he played absolutely brilliantly. So that I did see him. And I had actually, my son-in-law is a big Napoli fan. He's Italian, and he took me to a Napoli Monza match at Christmas there to the Maradona Stadium. So I've got a great photograph of me taken beside the portrait of Maradona in the Napoli Stadium.
Brilliant. That's something you'd be keen to do, Josh, isn't it? You been to a game at Napoli?
No been to a game, but been to the portrait, been to the stadium, been around Naples, seen all the kind of, well, the whole city's like a shrine to him. But I mean, just shows you his kind of the endearing legacy that he's had with a fan base.
Aye, Scott. Obviously, you were in Italy recently as well. We've not really heard about that much.
Oh yeah, I was hoping to go to the.
Heard about. Sorry, John. Hold on. Here a bit. Hold on.
Here we go.
We've not heard about it much.
I said that last straight face.
Maybe the podcast listeners haven't heard about it much.
Let's just try again with you, Josh. I'm just trying to catch up with you. All your trips that you send everybody, every picture that you've taken.
Guilty as charged, I suppose.
My other Italian story is that my boy, Ewan, worked for 3 years. We entered Milan. So I got to the San Siro for a number of great games. Went to the derby against AC Milan, and saw some great games at the San Siro, and absolutely loved it. So I'm more an Interista than a Napoli fan as far as Italian football is concerned.
I've always had a soft spot for Milan growing up, watching them in Channel 4. That was about the closest I got. Ciro, interestingly enough, though, I know that your son worked there at the time they won the Scudetto, and a wee bit of kind of symmetry with your life. It was a Mourinho, obviously won the treble. You're married to a Portuguese woman.
That's right, and I'm dreading the Scotland Portugal matches in the autumn, because I've never seen Scotland beat Portugal. I saw them draw at Hampden, and the infamous game was when, remember there was a game where we lost, was it 5-0 or 5-1?
Yep,
5-0 in Lisbon. And that was another example. We were playing great until they clugged Ali McCoys and broke his leg in that match. And then Scotland fell apart and Portugal won 5-0. And the interesting thing was, we had, it must have been the early 90s, I think it was, because we were in this house, and in this room I was watching the match, and we had a telly upstairs as well. And the Wanes, and there were Wanes at that time, were swithering which way to go. Giant Daddy and Support Scotland are upstairs and Support Portugal. So it started off, they were literally on the stair and on the fence, no sure which way to go. See, the end of the match, the three of them were upstairs supporting Portugal. They'd totally ditched their favour and supporting the winners, taking the easy option. So there, I've never forgiven them for that.
Chris, was that George Goodet? Did he not score in that year?
I think you might have.
I think that was a memory
of Selsby, correct? I think that was the first time I heard of George Goodet.
But aye, that was one of the qualifiers for the World Cup '94 that we obviously right. the one tournament we never made that in the '90s.
Yeah.
Remember it being famous for Brown getting his tactics off the Portuguese taxi driver. Portuguese taxi driver trying to spin him a yarn in terms of how Portugal would play. aside from World Cup, did you go to the Euros? Any Euros at all? England?
No, I didn't get to that. I didn't get to the Euros in England. No, just the World Cups. I hadn't been to any of the European Championships. But going back to Brazil, it was an amazing experience. The Germany one. I was behind the goal, but Peter Lorimer scored a fantastic rocket into, and Dennis Law came on to that in that match. I spent a night sleeping in Dortmund railway station. So that shows you how young I was that I was able to survive sleeping in the Grundy railway station. But it was fantastic. Great atmosphere.
Right, okay. Anyone else get any kind of other question about kind of Scotland just now covered? Right.
The only thing is that everybody else in our group seemed to have a good weekend. Did everybody notice that? Germany beat France, Denmark, Switzerland drew away Denmark, and Hungary beat Turkey. So I was a wee bit kind of envious watching those results coming in.
The Germany one worries me, because the final has actually had a decent result and against, of all teams, France.
Right.
They're coming good just in time.
It's only friendlies.
That's fine. I was going to say that earlier. The friendly results don't matter, it's the performances. And that's what concerns me about Germany, because the performance was good.
With the two young guys, Wirtz and Musiala, any team would want be happy to have them. It's more so probably defensively, further back, whether they're maybe kind of not as good as what they were. I don't know whether Billy, before we kind of talk a wee bit about Dundee United, I know you want to read a passage from the Valley Boys.
Okay. Yeah.
Maybe a good time to do that.
Aye. What is it? This Valley Boys is about, it's a bit about boys for the Irvine Valley in Ayrshire, where I come from, took FITBA to, among other places, Barcelona and Gothenburg. They were part of that Scottish professor thing to the late 19th century, taking FITBA around the world. So the Valley Boys are the boys who took FITBA to these places. But it's also a short story that develops into a dream sequence at the end, where the character Wally dreams of this great Scotland performance where everything you ever wanted comes together. And I'll read a wee bit for it. The dream gied him a game, a sick, perfect pulchritude. It was like a reel running in his mind every day since sign. Scotland played in the crew neck tap they wore back in 67 when they beat England at Wembley. But the team seemed to have all the greats for different eras playing at the A time and with the A purpose. 1 minute, you had Eric Caldo blocking an England attack. The next, you had Andy Robertson running into acres of space like a gazelle and putting in a whippet cross that had the lawman louping like a salmon and nodding it past Clements. You had the muckle yellow-haired laddie Colin Hendry winning every bloody heated battle with Terry Butcher, who was apoplectic with rage and imperial angst. We had Davy Mackay and Billy Bremner bringing and battling to win the ball back, only time it was won by an English for it. Bremner was controlled rage personified, like a mad dog with a bane who didn't let the opposition play. He got the second in a six-year Boekstra mash when he sclaffed the ball through John Terry's legs and redeemed himself finally in Wally Zien for missing the sitter against Brazil in Frankfurt back in 75. Another wee bit. When Wally first experienced the dream, he was usually at the match himself. But whiles his viewpoint gained for the Soothstone at Wembley to watching it in the telly. Being there was the nearest to heaven and earth a Scotland fan was ever going to get. But on the telly, the sight of English commentators louping off the gantry at half-time rather than having to comment on the nightmare they had just witnessed was an added bonus, he had to admit. Every one of them, as the ID, predicted an England win by a barrelload of goals. Say, to see them stoom with rage fury or lying on the gantry flare and roaring and greeting and kicking their wee heels and slamming their wee fists was a sight for sair een to behold. And when they started louping off the gantry, when all hope had gone, well, that was extremely satisfying. Ferdinand Loup, Shearer Loup, Lineker Loup. That's it.
Brilliant. Thanks for that.
Do you know what I like about that? That is so accurate. I even remember, see on Saturday there, Sky News had tweeted out that England were expected to beat Brazil. How'd that end up?
They can't help themselves. Is that a son-in-law you've got that's English? Is that right?
Aye. And he's going to, we're actually staying with him and Katrina in Frankfurt. They stay in Frankfurt. So we're actually going to be in Frankfurt. Andy's a Man United fan and an England fan. We're a Man United fan and an England fan. But we're going to be there, staying with them in Frankfurt and going to the different games round about the place. So I've got an Italian son-in-law, I've got an English son-in-law, and I've got a Russian daughter-in-law, and I've got a Portuguese wife. So there's a lot of FIBA going on there, a lot of teams going on, and a lot of different potential tensions going on.
What language do you speak when you all meet up?
Them all. Different. I mean, I've just said my wee... them all. including Scots. And I've just said my wee Arabella granddaughter staying, and it was a mixture of Portuguese, English, Scots, and a wee bit German that they got. And the ones in Brussels, they speak Italian with their father, English with their mother, Portuguese with a woman that helps look after them because they're lawyers and working all the day, and French at the school. So multilingual family,
See, before actually we move on to Dundee United, talk to us a wee bit about the importance of the kind of Scots language, because you're obviously a massive ambassador for it. And I know when I was talking to you before, you said there was maybe kind of some plans for possibly some big news this year with the government and that, I think.
There's a Scots language bill going through the parliament that'll get mere official recognition. It's got some official recognition, but hopefully they'll actually put a bit more money into recognising its power. I mean, there, one of the other things I love, I've done a bit FIBA, is the history of the Scots professors, of how we basically invented the modern game of FIBA, the passing game, and gave it to the world. And there's a great Scots statement by the kings as early as the 1450s, which goes, it is decreed and ordained that wapenshawns beholden sour times in the year, and the pitbull and the gowf be utterly cried doon and nocht use it. And a wapping show was a muster of arms. This was the king basically telling the boys, stop playing fitbull, stop practicing gowf, practice your arms to defend the realm against the English. This is in the 1450s, who are already playing fitbull. And it was that centuries old tradition that meant that when fitbull took off in England, mainly through Scots going down there, that our passing game made sure that for the first 20, 30, 40 years of international fitbull, it was the Scots that prevailed, because it was a game we had been playing for literally centuries.
Aye, you might enjoy, a few of us went on the tour, the Hampden football tour.
Yeah.
The Glasgow football tour, isn't it? The Lindsay and Graham, mm-hmm. the Scots professors. That's really good. And they talk about how, obviously, Scotland invented the game and how so many people that are daft enough to think it was England that invented it. But aye, it's a really good around all the different Hamdens as well. So aye, we'll move on to Dundee United, because obviously you grew up as a, well, grew up watching Kelly. Would you call yourself a Kelly fan, or was it more just kind of going to watch them because your dad was a Kelly fan?
When I was a wee boy, I was a Kelly fan. I mean, I was lucky enough, thinking about it, I'm probably, what happened was, I went to Rugby Park regularly until I was about 15 or 16. And then, as it sometimes happens, and it happened with me last season when the United were very, very poor, you think, what am I doing here? I'm suffering. I'm not enjoying this. You know, they're just making me miserable. Well, I went through that with Kilmarnock when I was about 15 or 16. And basically, I left my interest in club fitbull, continued supporting Scotland, but never went back to a club match until out of the blue, Dundee United appeared in the late 70s. And I was fascinated by them. I started going to see them. I was living in Edinburgh at the time and going to see them we lived near Easter Road and places like that. So that got me back into fitbull. But I was fortunate enough as a wee boy to see Killy winning the league at Tynecastle. And then I was fortunate enough years later to see United winning the league at Dens. Excuse me. So I'm one of the few people in Scotland probably that saw two of the teams out with the old firm winning the league, you know.
Aye, well, none of us have seen that anyway, that's for sure. What made you pick Dundee United over Dundee? Was it just the way that Dundee United were playing with the Jim McLean era? And
I'll just have a coughing fit first, then I'll talk to you. It was just the phenomenal ability that Jim McLean had. He was a top, top coach. And he created this team. It was a joy to watch. It really was. And I started going to matches and then just got hooked on it and then started following them from Edinburgh. I lived in Edinburgh at the time. Following them to places like Love Street and in Glasgow and in Edinburgh. And eventually I moved my family up to Newport and Tay. And at that time, I thought, God, if I move my family near Dundee United, I'll plummet probably and go back to the obscurity they came from, because I'm a fatalist about fitbull. But no, they continued playing well for years, and I managed to see them win the league, and I managed to see them win the cup twice. So that's no bad for a supporter of a team from outside the Central Belt.
Did you go to the UEFA Cup final against Gothenburg?
I didn't get to the final. I actually had a... I had a flight booked to Gothenburg, but the firm that was supposed to run it, something happened and they cancelled the flight. I was at the first round against Lens. I took the Edinburgh supporters bus, run a bus to Lens in northern France, and I went to that match. So I was there one of the early rounds, but I never actually got to the final. I saw that I was at the famous Barcelona game in the run-in, where we beat Barcelona once again. But that was the only one.
I know. 4 out of 4, isn't it, for Dundee United beating Barcelona?
Yeah. Your pal wrote some questions in the...
He did, aye.
Then you want me to answer them?
Aye. So one of the ones was... Well, we'll start with the worst one. So that player that he mentioned, is he the worst player that you've seen play for Dundee United?
Well, he was one of the worst. But he actually scored at least one great goal for United. I think it was the previous round to the clip that he showed. It was a playoff against Morton, and he scored a great strike. So at least he had that. Whereas, with a striker called Alan Irvine, who played for a few games for us, not the winger, a striker, Alan Irvine, and he was the biggest hullicket brute who couldn't jump. He couldn't jump off the ground. He was one of the worst. But the other player who was a terrible player, and he was unusual because he was Portuguese, and my wife and I described him as a Portuguese Haddy, because it was unusual to have a Portuguese player who wasn't a very good player, didn't have control of the ball. His name was Joaquim Ferraz. But again, everybody loved him because of one incident where Dundee were hammering United nothing each in a derby match, an evening derby match at Tannadice, when we had 10 minutes to go. We survived the battering, and we had 10 minutes to go. Ferraz robbed the Dundee defender of the ball and went in and scored the winner. So he was loved because of that one incident, but he wasn't a great player. So these are the ones I remember as no being great Dundee United players.
Aye. Obviously, one of our questions that he had was about the Dundee derby and favourite memories of that match. What would they be?
Well, that one, Farage scoring, robbing the Dundee player and scoring the winner. But also, Johnny Russell scored an absolute rocket. Top corner and a sunny day at Tannadice, and that was one of my great memories. Another great one was Billy Dodds scoring at Dens for an impossible angle and scoring a goal against Dundee. Now, for years, I mean, most of the games against Dundee were a pleasure to watch because United always won them. I'm hoping we'll get Dundee derbies again next year, and there'll be a lot tighter affairs, I'm sure, if we manage to get up.
Aye. The other question that John asked, we'll leave till kind of later because it's a wee bit it's one of those kind of showstopper type questions. But just when we're talking about just now in the current situation, I've got a couple of questions. Norrie Hunter asked, is Goodwin the man to lead the club back to glory?
I'll settle for the Premier League rather than glory. I'll settle for mid-table mediocrity next year in the Premier League. But glory, no, I don't think he would lead us to glory. But there's folk calling for him to be removed right now and to bring Neil Lennon in for six games, which I just think is insane. He kens the players he's got. Pip was the weirdest game where you can... That Napoli-Monza game, I saw. Napoli attacked the Hale match. Monza defended, threw bodies in the line, and it was a nothing each draw. That was a great Napoli team against a mediocre Monza team. Well, so many games at Tannadice, that's what it's like. It's teams defending, slowing things down, and we're a wee bit better than a lot of the other teams, but no that much better. So it can be a dour struggle at times, and it's been a dour struggle lately. Whether we'll actually... Well, to me... If we win on Saturday, we've got a very good chance of getting promoted. But we need to beat Wraith. Here's, like the Scotland match the other day, our games against Wraith this year have been some of our best football. We haven't deserved to lose any of these matches. The first one at Tannadice should have been a draw, at least. And it was a wonder strike that won it for Wraith. And we played our best football at Stars Park in the last game, and again, we lost the match. So we're due a break against Wraith, and I hope it comes this Saturday so that it's still in our hands for the run-in.
Aye, we've got a friend of the podcast, Andy, that runs, I don't know if you know it, the Dundee United FC stats page, but he asks, if United were to blow the league, how do you try and create some positivity around the club recognising that the playoffs still offer a realistic chance of promotion?
They offer a realistic chance, but United's record in the playoffs is pretty dire. The recent playoffs, anyway, they did. I was thinking, talking to my son earlier, the famous the playoff against Partick Thistle many, many years ago, where we got promoted, where we were going to stay in the lower tier until something like the 90th minute, when Andy McLaren put over a great ball and Big Welsh, he scored the equaliser. And then Christian Daly and Owen Coyle combined in the extra time to get us promoted against Partick. So I think the United fans are so frustrated at the performances at Tannadice. To me, that's the main thing. United fans, get behind the team for the run in and stop moaning, stop complaining and support them. And I think we'll just manage to do it. I think we'll get over the line. But if it's playoffs, it'll be dire. I'm not looking forward to that at all if it happens. But I'll be there.
It's interesting you talk about your son, because I did message him and ask him if he had any questions for you. And he said, did you think he would ever love football as much as he does today after the trauma and drama of that playoff against Partick Thistle?
Well, he would be about five. And I remember distinctly when Partick went ahead and the deathly atmosphere in Tannadice. And Ewan being five said, Dad, I don't want to be here. And I just felt like saying, son, I don't want to be here either. But we told it, and we overcame, and eventually the won in the great revival tradition.
There's obviously, we've got other questions, but the rest of you, you get questions for Billy about Dundee United or anything else, for that matter, in terms of football?
I'm trying to think if this has been actually mentioned or not yet, Billy, but... How confident are you of the title this season? I know we talked about Goodwin and whether or not he can get you up or not, but how confident are you in terms of the battle with Wraith to win the league?
I'm slightly confident. I'm 55% confident. That's the odds. It's no better than that. I mean, it's literally, it could go either way. We're due some breaks against them, as I say. We've had no breaks at all. They've had all the breaks. So I'm hoping that'll go our way. And that might be just enough to get us over the line. But it's a dour struggle. If you've ever been in that league, and I mean, even Rangers were other resources. Remember, they get beat in the playoff with Motherwell. So it's a hard league to get out of, you know.
What was that
Billy, Billy, do you fear if you don't go up this season, you'll be down for a couple of years, or do you think you'll bounce straight back up next season?
This is a year for the bounce. The bounce is going to happen this year. If we stay down, we could be down for a while. I'm sorry to say, yeah. And it'd be a tragedy for Scottish football, because Dundee United are the sixth biggest club in Scotland, support-wise. So, I mean, it's great seeing all these wee clubs do well, but when you see them bring 300 supporters and United are taking 1,500 or something, or 2,000 sometimes, to away grounds, it's a big difference for Scottish football. I mean, I would love the top division to become 14 or 16. So that clubs like Dundee United wouldn't have to struggle like that. And gradually other clubs with similar great home supports like Falkirk and Dunfermline and Wraith would be able to challenge and get into that division. At the moment, I think Aberdeen was one of the sticking points for years. Rangers and Celtic, and I think Aberdeen were the third club. Maybe Aberdeen, because of their... being close to relegation themselves this year, maybe they'll change their attitude, and it'd be great for Scottish football. Like, I mean, Portuguese, Italian football has loads of clubs available. So I'd love to see that change eventually.
Scott, you anything along the Dundee United, Mark?
Just basically, I was going to ask when was your favourite time to support them, but I'm guessing it must have been the 1980s.
Oh yeah. Well, I came to them really in the late 70s. That's when I get hooked on it, and they were a great team, but there was also a great atmosphere around the club. I mean, literally, if a game was snowed off or something like that, Jim McLean phoned up the different supporters clubs and tell them cancel the buses, the game's off. It was like that. I mean, I wrote a play called The Fairly Matt You Work about Dundee juice spinner set in the early part of the 20th century. And Paul Sturrock brought about four or five of the United players to the rep, to Dundee rep, to see the play being performed. It was that kind of club, you know. It was they were great folk, and they still are. It's a great family atmosphere, a club. And as I say, they bring a lot of colour and they bring a lot of verve, and they've always brought a lot of style to the Premier League. So hopefully they'll make it back there this year.
Jeff, Dundee United fan, has asked, what's your thoughts on the potential links of Brentford kind of having a stake in the club at Dundee United? I mean, a few clubs are doing this. Charlie, obviously, you know, at Hibs with Bournemouth. Think it's a good or bad thing for Scottish football, Billy?
It's hard to see. I mean, they had a strange relationship. I think it was with Fulham a few years ago, and some boys come up. I think it was the year we got relegated. Some Fulham players come up, and they were dire and duff, and they were just shoved in because they were coming for a top English team. They'd be better than what we had, and they weren't at all. So potentially it could be a good thing, and the money invested could be a good thing, but we just have to see how it went. But I think all clubs are exploring these kind of avenues nowadays.
Especially in Scotland, where the money's not there, it kind of does make sense to that extent. It's a bit like Football Manager back in the day. You'd have your feeder clubs and you've got loan players. That's what it's like now. Charlie, what's your thoughts on it? Are you quite happy with what's happening at Hibs?
I'm delighted, aye. 6 million more than we had at the start of the season. So I think it's only a good thing for Scottish football, to be honest with you. I think when you look at the money that Celtic and Rangers have, not to bring back the whole budget chat like David Martindale loves to do, but I think for clubs in Scotland to even begin to bridge the gap slightly is a good thing. I know Hearts are a different kettle of fish because they've got a investor within the club already, but I think teams like Hibs, Aberdeen probably to an extent could do with one as well. Like, your smaller clubs that are meant to be big clubs should be getting investment. I think it's only a good thing, and hopefully in 5-10 years down the line the playing field's a bit more level, but that would need to take a lot.
Yeah.
I suppose the biggest concern is that you're just developing players for other clubs as opposed to getting some kind of stability and continuity. Chris and Josh, think it would ever happen with Celtic or Rangers from either point of view?
Do you mean Celtic is part of the City Group?
Well, they did it well, but it didn't really work, did it, that well?
I mean, Mark Wall's away, but I'm not sure that changes much, to be honest. these things, we all know our levels, I think, is the point. But this, unfortunately, we're not in the era where the smaller clubs can compete with the bigger clubs realistically anymore. Money has ruined the game and pretty much stopped all that. I mean, you look at the season that Dundee United won the league. There was 1 point between the top three that season. The team that finished third was Aberdeen, who won the Cup Winners' Cup. Mm-hmm. Dundee United then went on to play all the way through to the semi-final of the European Cup. Let's face it, with a rub, because there was something funny with that Roma second leg.
Yeah.
It's not long after that that money came in and ruined the game. Mm-hmm. And we are now trying to find ways to paper over that problem. And whether that's these partnerships, whether it's loaning in one of the 95 players that a team like Chelsea have got in their squad, for instance.
Yeah.
It's danced around the big issue that money has ruined the game. So we need to find a ways to try and make things more competitive, but nothing really feels like it's working, unfortunately.
What's your thoughts on it, Josh? Would you want Rangers to be kind of part of that kind of type of setup?
Say that again. Say that again, John.
Would you want Rangers being type of that part of setup whereby you're kind of rely getting players from other clubs, like a kind of, you know, feeder club?
No. That's yeah. That's the short of it. No. No. Do you want a longer? I can offer a longer answer, but look, I mean. The financial position Hibs are in is different to Rangers, so who am I to talk, right? But, you know, I just think that there's an element of, are you really your own independent club? You know?
We fancy getting five players from Newcastle again. Mind that time? Rangers get, is it five players from Newcastle?
Five, right? What, one of them,
games between them.
One of them was really good. That was this, yeah. But, I mean, obviously, it's a completely different scenario, but it's not always this. It's not always the case that you can get access to loads of youth players through a pro youth academy in England. They're all really good. I mean, a lot of them are very good, but I just look. I'm in favour of fan ownership anyway. I'm much more in favour of the German model, and that's what this ain't. So, for a purely objective standpoint, I'm not in favour of kind of corporate ownership of football clubs anyway. I'm always in favour of the kind of 51% plus model. And to be fair to my club, Rangers are a significant, no, obviously not the majority, but a significant chunk of Rangers is fan owned. So and over time, I hope that the amount of that increases, and we might be able to get to a stage in Scottish football where the majority, if not all, clubs are fan owned. But again, yeah, it's looking at finances, and for Hibs, like I said at the start, for Hibs, it is a very different question for Hibs about this deal, because the amount of money that it's bringing them in obviously is going to significantly alter their ability to do business in the transfer market and their ability to be competitive in the league potentially. So I understand why they done it. I just, if, you know, my own personal view is that I wouldn't want it for my club.
Scott, I know you've not got a horse in the race, but I know you'll have a view on
aye,
it.
Aye. Horse died. Wank, 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 wank.
I don't see any real issues, but I prefer our own models in terms of, you know, I've covered a lot of our own football clubs in Scotland, and I think it's a great idea. But I think you can have the two. I mean, I don't see why you couldn't have established links with, you know, Hibs and Bournemouth and things like that. Even if you were fan owned, you still need to investment. Look at Motherwell, you know what I mean? They're desperate for investment. You still need to get some sort of investment. And just having links, do you know what I mean? Rangers and Celtic could do with better links with bigger clubs. It just makes sense. You know, the Manchester City Celtic thing makes sense. You know, you might not want to give them a stake in your club, because that will put fans against you. I think Josh is kind of proven that fact with Rangers, and I think it'd be the exact same thing with Celtic fans. But you can establish links that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to give part of your club away, and you can establish links where you do give the investment, you do give a part of the club away, but that helps you as a football club when it comes to coaching, when it comes to bringing in young players. People say you're developing these young players for somebody else, but you're still going to get that time with those young players if they do. Look at Madison at Aberdeen. If you can establish a way where you're bringing in that type of player to your football club, then I don't see it to be the big drawback that lots of other people see it.
It can work both ways, though. I mean, take Patrick Roberts as an example. He went to Man City and never broke into this Man City team. He came to Celtic, had a great time at Celtic, and then went elsewhere, and it's just not worked out for him anywhere else. So, Where's the value for Roberts in that? There's no longevity in it.
Well,
but he's obviously had a good couple of years.
I think the issue is, like as you mentioned earlier, about like to Chelsea, a lot of these players are just assets that they know they can make money off from the loan market. Like, there's no intention of playing them. They're just getting them to basically get a loan fee every year that'll exceed what they've paid for them or what they're paying them wages.
But no, not now, though. The financial fair play actually makes more sense. So that's why you see Chelsea selling Mason Mount. That's why you're seeing, because they get the full amount of that money back into their budget because they've hardly spent any money on those players. So you're seeing them selling more of these young players than they've ever done before.
The problem is, though, Scott, is where they're selling them, because they're just selling them within their own league. And, you know, the pot of money in English football just gets sloshed about even more, you know.
I'm not saying it's a good thing, Josh. I'm just saying that it's now changed slightly in a model of that they're not constantly loaning players. They're actually selling a lot of their youth products, Palmer to Chelsea, just so they can get that full amount back into their budget. It's more a financial thing than anything else.
It is interesting. I'm going off piste here a wee bit, but it is interesting. What is interesting is this whole independent regulator that's going to be coming in England, and see what effect that has. I think that's something that football across the world probably needs a lot more of.
Do you trust, for instance, the current government to do any better at football than they have with anything else, like COVID and NHS and everything else that they get involved in?
No, and I certainly don't trust the incoming government either. That's for Scottish political forums podcast.
I mean, if I do Scottish political forums, then Billy's the ideal man for it. But I will keep to the football for just now.
But I mean, it'll be interesting to see if that has any effect or kind of what effect that would have. And football needs a lot more of independent regulation to stop some of the kind of craziness. Certainly the English football. I mean, English football is no longer a football league, and that's been my view for a long time. It's just a football based psychodrama.
Aye, it's one for another day. Anyway, we can go into more detail, but what we'll do, we'll round up a wee bit of fun. So, five Dundee United players are. Coaches, past or present, you would have for a dinner party, Billy?
Well, the number one would be Neil Paterson, who won the Oscar for his screenplay of Room at the Top, and he played for Dundee United. The other one would be Andy McLaren. I've got a soft spot for Andy because I remember the semi-final when United won the cup. The semi-final, they played Aberdeen at Hampden. And the first, they played them twice, actually. They were 1-0 down with about, I don't know, 8 minutes to go or something. I remember where we were sitting. The United fans were getting a wee bit depressed. We're going out of the cup. And the ball came out for a shy near us. And Andy McLaren came and did that with his hands to raise the crowd. And he got them going, got them cheering again. And again, big Brian Welsh equalised with a header, and that got us to the final where we beat Rangers in that famous final. And so Andy McLaren would definitely be one of the guests. I'd also like to get a current guest. He's not a player with Dundee United, but Neil Forsyth, the writer who wrote Bob Servant and who wrote the series Gold just now that you can watch in the BBC iPlayer about the Brinksmar robbery. If you notice in that, it's Tannadice Productions that produced it. And in the episode I saw yesterday, which is set in Spain in the 1980s at a timeshare resort that this guy, one of the criminals, is building. This guy's in a Dundee United top. So I love the Forsyth, the fact that he brings in United in very unusual places. So he would be our guest too. And then to the great team, John Holt and Hegarty are smashing guys. I like them. And Christian Daly, I mean, a wee story about Christian Daly. He's married to a lassie from Newport, And his dad, Neil Moody, an ex-BBC guy, I know in Newport. And when Ewan and Katrina, my two youngest, Ewan would be about 6, 7, and Katrina maybe 11, 10. And we were invited to go and meet Christian. This was the year after he had played in the World Cup finals in France. They had played against. And went round, and he was off on ice. He was great with the Wayne's Christian. And at the time, Ewan had lovely black curly hair that his mammy loved and his big sisters loved. But he was getting a bit of stick for this. It was a bit too feminine looking for some of his macho pals at the skill. This was getting to Ewan. So he kept plaguing his ma to get his hair cut until we went to see Christian Daly. And at the end of seeing us, Christian Daly said to Ewan, "Ewan, son, one piece of advice. Never cut your curls off. The lassies love it." The next day, Ewan was supposed to go for a haircut the next day. In the morning, Ewan says, "Oh, that haircut, Mum, cancel it." So that was a nice story with Christian. Yeah.
I seem a good lad. So that your five then?
I think that's five. I think that five. Would Yeah, that would...
You maybe went six, yeah. But we'll allow you an extra one because you've got a cough. We'll allow you an extra one.
Right. Well, I say that for the great team, Luggy 2 was a great player. And the fact that he brought along about four or five United players to see my play at the rep. So Paul Sturrock. And Paul Sturrock was a great guy to watch in that great team. What a striker he was. He never get very many Scotland caps either, actually.
Aye, we spoke about that the other week, actually. There was a few strikers from that year. I'd never get as many caps as they could have. Ought to have one of them now. Right, you can't have a dinner party without some good food and alcohol. So what's your three courser and your choice of beverage for that meal?
Well, I would go with a prawn starter, and I would go with a Sauvignon Blanc from the Loire. Loire had a lot of Scottish Jacobite exiles drinking that wine in the 18th century. For the main course, I'd probably go with something very traditional, like beef Wellington or something like that. Or my wife does a great Iberian stew with olives, and I'd go with claret. I'd go with top grade Bordeaux claret, which is the other Scotland's national drink. With that. And for dessert, I would go with Cranachan, raspberries and oatmeal and cream and honey. And I would go with a vintage port made by Graham's or Sandeman's or Coburn's, one of the great port houses that's of Scottish origin. I would go with that.
I mean, sounds good.
A bit of class on the podcast, which we usually have when Aaron's on.
Doesn't it? Have a bit of class. Like when was it Dave was picking, I don't know, but Dave was picking for his three-courser lentil soup. As good a dish as lentil soup is. Sorry about fans here. Anyone else got any kind of wee questions for Billy before Josh does his wee showstopper?
Do you know what I was going to ask earlier on? What was the bigger disappointment in the 80s? The Roma semi-final or the Gothenburg final?
Well, I would say the Roma, actually, because the first leg we were so high, winning 2-0, and awareness that we could take them, and then the fact that Ralph Milne missed a great chance in the first 5 minutes of that game, that would put us 3-0 ahead. And even though the ref was proven to be corrupt later on and took bribes, it would have been even hard for him to give them four goals, to find four goals for them. So I think that was the disappointment, the Roma one. Gothenburg, it was actually, we're disappointed to lose the final, but the atmosphere was terrific. And the fact that the United fans applauded Gothenburg, and there's a good atmosphere between the fans, and we got a fair play stand due to it. UEFA gave us money to build a wee stand due to it, so that was a positive thing to come out of the the final. And the fact that Scottish teams like United and Aberdeen were getting to finals, and in Aberdeen's case, winning finals by then, is a remarkable thing.
Do you think you could have beat Liverpool in 84?
It would have been hard. It would have been hard, but it would have been great to have been there to see it. Yeah.
I wanted to ask as well, but obviously your Portuguese family, how did you celebrate the 2016 Euros win?
Well, my daughter was at the match. Yep. Katrina was there with her husband, Andy. They managed to go over. They were staying in London at the time and went over for that. So what a memorable occasion. Here in the house, my wife was so overwrought with that match and so fearsome of it that she was in the kitchen. And she only come through when I shouted when they scored, because she was so scared of what would happen, so kind of uptight about it. So I watched that match just on the television and with a great celebration and everybody phoning everybody at the end of it. But what a great. To go to France and to beat France in their home in the final was phenomenal. And to lose Cristiano Ronaldo halfway through. Actually, just one other story which I'll tell you with a Portuguese connection. It's a bit Forrest Gumpish, but it's a true story. When my eldest daughter Joanna was about 17, she's now 40, so you can work out when this took place. Her grandmother took her to a posh hairdresser in Lisbon to get her hair done and get makeup and everything. And she come out and she's looking $1 million. And some young boys were waiting to get in to get their hair cut. And one of them run after Joanna and begged her for her phone number. And Joanna had a look at him. He's a good looking young boy, but he had a ring in his lug. Wasn't her type at all. So didn't give him the phone number. So that was that. That was the end of that. 6 months later, the grandmother, Donna Hortensia, is in the posh hairdresser again in Lisbon. And the hairdresser, the guy who owns it, says, oh, by the way, Dr. Donna Hortensia, when your granddaughter was here 6 months ago, remember the young boy that was chasing after her trying to get his phone number? Well, his name is Cristiano Ronaldo. And he's just broken in to the Sporting Lisbon first team. And everybody expects great things of him. So there you are. What could have been?
You could have been at the final too. You'd have.
I can.
Right, that's one of the best stories we've had. Right, anything else, Charlie? Scott?
I don't think any story can top that.
No, I think I'm well out of questions after that one.
We're all stunned. Brilliant. Right, Josh, go for it. The showstopper.
Right, showstopper, Billy, last one. And we generally tend to ask this of all our guests. It's the game or the question is Desert Island Dicks. You are marooned on a desert island. You can take one film, one album, one book, and one DVD or Blu-ray or whatever of one football match, any football match you've ever watched or been at. What are they? So you've got film, book, album, and any football match.
I think the football match would be the one I refer to in my wee story there, the 67 Scotland-England match. I interviewed Jim Baxter about that. And asked him of the famous Dune and the Ball incident. And he said, son, when you're that far ahead of the opposition, that there's no chance of them catching you. You get straight Dune in that ball and sit in the ball, which I thought was absolutely magnificent. Interviewed him in his pub near Ibrox. Films. I go back to my childhood. Davy Crockett, King of the Wild Frontier, hugely influential on me. So much so that when the circus came to Gosden and it was told that Davy Crockett was going to be in the circus, disappointment when I discovered that it wasn't the real Davy Crockett that was in the circus in Gosson was life-changing for me. Albums, I'd maybe actually, well, yeah, I would go with a great soul album for the 60s or 70s. So it would be The Temptations or the Isley Brothers or Diana Ross and the Supremes. That was, I loved that. I loved Black American music for that period. And I was lucky enough, I spent the summer of 1970 in Berlin and I went to the Black GIs Club and listened to James Brown and people like that. So it would be Black American music from that period. What else? What was the other thing?
A book.
Sunset Song by Lewis and Gibbon. I got it as a school prize when I was 15 and it changed my life.
Yep. Great choice. Great choice of book, definitely. Great choices all round, but great choice of book. I love Sunset Song.
Brilliant. All round, some cracking stories. Thank you very much for coming on, Billy. Hope you've enjoyed it.
Have that. Good crack, boys. Cheers.
And we'll need to get you on closer to the Euros, maybe, if you fancy it.
Right.
We'll be getting Billy in Germany, John. Exactly. We'll be on the beers in Germany. He'll be
an air one on my list. I'm sitting for a couple of nights, so I'll be calling round.
Very good, very well. I'm looking forward to getting back to the Hofbräu House. I hitchhiked to Germany before the FITBA. I hitchhiked there when I was about 16, 17 and went to the Hofbräu House. So I'm looking forward to getting back there to Munich, definitely, with my boy.
A cracking country. Right, thanks again. And cheers, Chris, Scott, Charlie, Josh.
Thank you. Cheers. Never a chore, always a pleasure.
Cheers, boys.
Cheers, guys.